bring Christian greetings. And it's been good to be here. I was sitting up here looking back and seeing the young people, we have the middle aged, some older people, and I won't try to put you in the right bracket. You can figure that out yourself. But it's a blessing. It was a blessing to have the children up front and say the verses. They did very good this morning, having to wait that long and still getting their verse said well. So I think those verses are so important as we face to in preparation for life. Those things stick with them. Those things come back, and I believe those things that are in their hearts will come back to them. Excuse me. This morning, I wasn't sure what to title the message, and I don't know if I've got the right title, but I've titled it Parental Responsibility. And I'm keenly aware that I'm in the middle of that, and that there's, as I study this, and there's a lot of areas that I fall short in, that I need to work on. But I believe it's something that as parents we have one opportunity, and it's so fleeting, it goes so fast. You know, as I thought about the responsibility of parents, you know, we're fairly young when we start with our first child, even if you're middle 20s or wherever, that's still fairly young. And we're all in the same place. We have just come from childhood. So we have a lot of, there's a lot of things we might be reactionary, or we are reactionary typically. So maybe some things that we felt our parents were too hard on or not hard enough on, maybe we fall off, it's easy to fall off into the other ditch and go the other way instead of finding a good balance. And that's normal. But it's important that we strive to find that to what we're doing to line up with the Word of God. You know, we've got the answers here that we need to know as we go through life. I'd like to start out with reading a few verses out of 2 Kings chapter 2. And that might seem like a strange passage to go to, but I think there's a lot of, in the culture we're in, there is a lot of disrespect. And here's an example of disrespect to an older person. It's a very well-known passage, 2 Kings chapter 2. I'm going to break in there at 19. We know that before this, I'll just go ahead and read this, and then I'll share a little bit. 2 Kings 2, verse 19. And the men of the city said unto Elisha, Behold, I pray thee, the situation of this city is pleasant, as my lord seeth, but the water is not, and the ground barren. And he said, Bring me a new cruse, and put salt therein. And they brought it to him, and he went forth unto the spring of the water, and cast the salt in there, and said, Thus saith the Lord, I have healed these waters. There shall not be from thence any more death or barren land. So the waters were healed unto this day, according to the saying of Elisha, which he spake. And he went up from thence unto Bethel. And as he was going up by the way, there came forth little children out of the city, and mocked him, and said unto him, Go up, thou bald head, go up, thou bald head. And he turned back, and looked on them, and cursed them in the name of the Lord. And there came forth two she-bears out of the wood, and Terah 40 and two children of them. And he went from thence to Mount Carmel, and from thence he returned to Samaria. We talk about a culture of disrespect, and I think that culture goes back as far as the fall of mankind. Here was Elisha, a man of God, you know, a man that God had honored, a man that had picked up the mantle of Elijah, a man of God, a man that took that mantle and was able to, the waters parted for him to walk across the river. And a man that his peers, when they saw this, had realized that he had the spirit and the power of Elijah. You know, somewhere These youth had been taught or allowed disrespect. Somewhere their parents had failed. And maybe they were only taking the respect a step further than their parents. You know, I don't think it was so much Elisha, when he turned around and cursed them, I don't think it was he was doing that from a personal aspect because they were saying, go up that bald head, but simply because of who they were mocking. You know, Elijah had just went up. Elijah had just went up in a glorious way. And that's what they were mocking. And I believe that's what he was, it was against God. And that's why he talked like that. And that's why God brought such harsh judgment on them. We don't know what the actual consequences were there, if they were just tore up, if they were killed or not. We don't know that. But we know it was serious. Now, Proverbs 22:6 says, train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. And I'm going to be, I mentioned that book the other night, The Collapse of Parenting, led by Leonard Sachs. And I'll be doing some quoting from that book today. But his interpretation of that verse is, if you compel a child to behave virtuously, then when he is an adult, he will continue to behave virtuously. Or maybe we could say he won't forget it. He's been given the tools. He has a much better chance at living a virtuous life. One old writer says, a person becomes virtuous by doing virtuous acts. Behavior becomes identity. The historian Will Durant says, we are what we repeatedly do. Excellence, then, is not an act, but a habit. Excellence, then, is not an act, but a habit. You know, behavior becomes identity. We are what we repeatedly do. That's who we become. That's what characterizes us. If you want to turn with me over to Deuteronomy chapter 11, I want to read a few verses from there and also a few verses from Deuteronomy chapter 6. And these verses, some of them are quoting what we heard the first night when Brother Harry Argo was here, when Jesus was asked what the greatest commandment was. He went back to this commandment. Deuteronomy chapter 11, verse 18. I'll start there. Therefore shall ye lay up these my words in your heart and in your soul, and bind them for a sign upon your hand, that they may be as frontlets between your eyes, and ye shall teach them your children, speaking of them when thou sittest in thine house, and when thou walkest by the way, when thou liest down, and when thou risest up, and thou shalt write them upon the doorposts of thine house, and upon thy gates, that your days may be multiplied in the days of your children, in the land which the Lord sware unto your fathers to give them, as the days of heaven upon the earth. For if ye shall diligently keep all these commandments which I command you to do them, to love the Lord your God, to walk in all his ways, and to cleave unto him, then will the Lord drive out all these nations from before you, and ye shall possess greater nations and mightier than yourselves. And let's back to Deuteronomy chapter 6, verses 4 through 9. Deuteronomy 6, verse 4. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God is one Lord, and thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thine heart, with all thy soul, with all thy might. And these words which I command thee this day shall be in thine heart. And thou shalt teach them diligently unto thy children. And thou shalt talk of them when thou sittest in thine house, and when thou walkest by the way, and when thou liest down, and when thou risest up. And thou shalt bind them for a sign upon thine head. And they shall be as frontlets between thine eyes, and thou shalt write them upon the posts of thy house and on thy gates. Again, he mentions in here, that first passage said that, for if ye shall diligently keep, and then in Deuteronomy 6, he says, and thou shalt teach them diligently. Now, the Hebrew thought there would be of inscribing to inculcate or to implant by repeated statement or admonition. I believe that would include by consistent example. You know, we can't expect something from our children that we aren't doing. And it doesn't simply happen by telling. You know, these verses show clearly that it is a way. It is something that is done all the time. It's done by relationship. It's something that's spontaneous. That's a part of us. And in a sense, as fathers and mothers, I believe we share with our children our experience with our father, our experience, the relationship we have. That experience is what they're looking at. You know, when we as parents have lost respect for the authorities in our lives, can we expect anything different from our children? Can anybody tell me what happened August 9th, 2014? Michael Brown, unarmed teen, was shot and killed by police in Ferguson, Missouri. And I'm not here justifying or condemning any actions by authorities. But this young man in the prime of his life, a big boy, he was tall, he was strong. He had just graduated from high school. He was scheduled to start school, to start training for in heating and air conditioning. He was shot. Why? He just stole from a convenience store. And then he was told by a policeman to get off the road and walk on the sidewalk. And instead of listening, he tried to tackle the officer through his open window. You know, someone failed him. Or maybe he was simply taking his cues from the peers of his age instead of listening to those that were older than him. If I remember right, when that happened, I read his grandpa said that he wouldn't listen. He had no respect for authority. And regardless of what could have been done differently, he lost his life because of disrespect. Disrespect for authority. A friend of mine that I learned to know through business dealings, we were talking about this issue of respect one day, and he said, I tell my children that, you know, if you are given orders by someone in authority, by an officer, civil authority, he said, do what they say. He said, I don't care how innocent you are. I don't care, you know, what he said, just do what they say. Disobeying could cost you your life. You don't know the circumstances that they've just been dealing with or what they might have just been through. Obey. Ask questions later. You know, he told them, I know you. I know you wouldn't be, you know, I know there's some, you know, you wouldn't be doing drugs. You wouldn't, there's vices. But he said, they don't know you, and they don't understand. You know, he said, you just obey, respect. Now, this starts as a young child. And I'm afraid in our circles, this culture of disrespect has permeated our circles more than we want to admit. You know, when a young child is defiant, when an older person tells them to quit doing something or to do something, there's something wrong. Respect starts in teaching children to respect at a young age. You know, I believe a place of worship is not a place where children should be running around, jumping over benches and making a lot of noise. And I appreciate here as a whole, I think parents do very well. And I know children are children. We've had children. And I know what it's like. And I know there were grandparents and others that helped us with at least some of ours. And there's something about someone else stopping you, jerking you to attention, that sometimes it sinks in a little deeper. You know, some children can be told a couple times. Others, it takes discipline to learn. You know, and I appreciate that, you know, after your own children are a little older and you see others tearing around, you see other parents jumping to attention and running after the children, it's just kind of a good feeling to see someone else having to do that. And I appreciate seeing parents that are vigilant there, and I think it's part of just learning. And it's important that they learn that when someone older asks them to do something, that they also respect. You know, children learn quickly. You know, the advantages us older ones have is that we have the experience of childhood. We know the tricks of the trade. You know, remember when you wanted to do something? And you were pretty sure that you knew it was kind of on shaky ground, and you would analyze which parent was the best one to go to, and you'd carefully go to that one and ask them, and maybe it worked. You just hope they wouldn't confer. But you know, I also knew that I had to do it very carefully, because if they figured out what I was up to, the plan was foiled and it wasn't going to work. My parents worked together. And I believe that's very important, that as parents we work together. I think one thing us fathers have is in common, that it's easy for us to tune out or to be engrossed in something, and something's going on over here, and finally your wife says, you know, don't you see what's going on? Well, no, I'm not. Or maybe that's just me. But, you know, where are we? You know, as fathers, we are the protector. We are responsible. You know, disrespect to the child's mother should never be tolerated. And a child should learn quickly that it will not be tolerated. Colossians 3:19, I think, puts it into perspective beautifully. Husbands, love your wives, and be not bitter against them. Children, obey your parents in all things, for this is well-pleasing unto the Lord. I think the writer there gives us a picture in these verses of how a home should function, respect and order. You know, the culture we are dealing with, the culture that we're in, it's all about self. You know, that precious little baby, when it's born, it thinks the world's all about it. It's not worried about anything else. I am hungry. I want this. I don't feel good. I want to be fed now. I don't want to sleep. And I won't, and you won't either. You know, that's okay, but if that doesn't change soon, it will not be okay. The little one will need to learn self-control. There are other people in this world. I like that verse that the intermediate said, I don't know if I can quote it exactly, but someone say that verse, intermediate. What was your verse? Who can say it? Good job. Okay, he that has no rule over his own spirit, is that right? Or so, is like a city that is broken down with no walls. And you know, that's how true that is. If a child doesn't learn self-control, you know, I think they need to learn. I forget where I was. I was within a group of people. This wasn't in our circles. It was some other local people I was talking to, and we were talking about eating food. And this fellow told me, maybe it was somebody here, I don't remember, I don't think so. But I know for whoever it was told me, he said that, you know, when I was young, what was on the table, that's what you ate. There was no questions. I mean, you ate it. And, you know, we see that a lot of times today, we don't see that anymore. That's not so important. You can choose what you want to eat. It's optional. You know, when I was young and growing up, it wasn't optional unless it was dessert. We didn't have dessert that often. But there was one thing that I didn't have an option on, and that was tapioca, if that was on the menu. And I don't know why though I didn't have an option there. I'm still not sure about that. But I had to eat my portion, and even in that, because that there was no exception there, and maybe it was my strong statements. I'm not sure about it. But I clearly remember having to eat my portion. And I won't say what they reminded me of, in case you make your children eat them. But this one particular time, I decided to try to fix things up and help it out a little bit. My mom often had monster cookies. And I liked monster cookies, and they had those M&Ms in them, and I took a big monster cookie and crumbled it up in there in that tapioca. And, well, that helped, but I thought another one would make it better, and another, and I stuck them in there. And, you know, I started eating these things, and, well, I wasn't used to eating a lot of sweets, and pretty soon things went south. I was just sick. And I would have been happy if Frog would have thrown them out to the birds with everything with it. But you know, there's a lot of value. I'm thankful that I was made to, you know, as we eat, as you eat food that's set before you, you'll learn to like it. That I think that that's what sets your appetites, and you learn to at least be able to eat it, maybe not enjoy it. And I think that's important that children learn that young in life. Over 30 years ago, a pastor named Robert Fulghum wrote a book titled All I Really Need to Know I Learned in Kindergarten. And here's a little bit, an excerpt from that. Share everything, play fair, don't hit people, put things back where you found them, clean up your own mess, say you're sorry when you hurt someone, wash your hands before you eat, live a balanced life, learn some, think some, draw and paint and sing and play and work every day some. When you go out into the world, watch out for traffic. Hold hands and stick together. As I read that, I thought there's a lot of truths in that. And there's a couple of verses that came to my mind that I thought summed those points up. And one of those is Ephesians 4:32. And be ye kind one to another, tenderhearted, forgiving one another, even as God for Christ's sake hath forgiven you. You know, saying you're sorry when you hurt someone. When you watch out for traffic, hold hands, stick together, being kind, don't hit, play fair, share. Hebrews 13:15 says, by him therefore let us offer the sacrifice of praise to God continually, that is, the fruit of our lips, giving thanks to his name. But to do good and to communicate, forget not, for with such sacrifices God is well pleased. Praise, thankfulness, communicating, relationships. James 4:17, therefore to him that knoweth to do good and doeth it not, to him it is sin. And you know, I don't think I read that verse, I think that verse without remembering the Brother James telling the story one time that he's driving down the road and he saw a piece of trash beside the road, and it bothered him that there's something good he could do, he could pick up that trash, and he went back and got it. And that's remarkable, but if we all do that, maybe we wouldn't have to do it that much. But to him that knoweth to do good and doeth it not, you know, when we have the opportunity. Now these rules, these things, those rules that I just read, must be taught. They don't come just naturally. You know, last Sunday when Brother David was talking about those savages from Ecuador, you know, they weren't taught those rules. They didn't have those characteristics till they were taught them. They were very selfish, jealous, bloodthirsty group of people till they were taught differently and they found a better way, the biblical way, Jesus' way. In American culture, parental authority is being challenged. You know, instead of children getting their cues from parents, it matters much more to them what their own peer group thinks. And media has amplified that. You know, we're living in a culture that depicts parents as unreliable and untrustworthy, not trustworthy. You know, just read a Bear Stain Bear book. Papa Bear is trying to show his boy how to ride a bicycle, and he says, I got to show you one more thing, and he always ends up making a fool out of himself. You know, and the boy keeps falling on, and so they go again, and, you know, he finally, in order to avoid oncoming traffic, he ends up hanging away up in a tree, his bike, and his boy has to help him get it down. You know, he's learned another lesson. Well, it's just the idea that, you know, dad doesn't really know what's best. He does, you know, he just, and that's the general thing in culture. Proverbs 23:22, hearken unto thy father that begat thee, and despise not thy mother when she is old. Proverbs 22:15, foolishness is bound in the heart of a child, but the rod of correction shall drive it far from him. In 1735, Benjamin Franklin wrote, early to bed, early to rise, makes a man healthy, wealthy, and wise. I think we probably all know those phrases by heart. And there may be more truth in his words than we give him credit for. You know, conscientiousness is a trait by which you can predict the outcome of a person's life, maybe more than any other trait. Early to bed, you know, deliberately abstaining from late night temptations, getting up early, resisting the temptation to sleep late are good measures of self-control. And I think it goes along with that verse that the intermediate class had. You know, self-control is a characteristic of conscientiousness. Now, there's a couple misconceptions that are prevalent in our culture. You know, in society today, many parents have come to assume that good grades and test scores are the best measures of achievement and the most reliable key to future happiness. You know, studies show that if you want your child to be healthy, wealthy, and wise, then your first priority should not be measures of cognitive achievement, but measures of conscientiousness, such as honesty, integrity, and self-control. The researchers found that children who scored high on measures of self-control at 11 years of age, between 11 and 14, were much less likely to report substance abuse at 32 years of age. It showed that they were those that were taught to be conscientious, those that had learned self-control. 20 years later, 32 range, and this wasn't just a couple people, this was done over a big group of people. They were those that had been taught self-control at 11 years age were living happier, more successful lives than those that weren't. You know, IQ, national background, poverty level, all those things weren't the important factor. It's true that those with higher education sometimes had better jobs and more income, but they weren't necessarily better off financially. Because if they hadn't learned self-control, it was very likely that those making $50,000 a year were ahead of those that were making $300,000 a year, six times the amount. Because they had learned to live within their means, where the ones that had the high incomes hadn't learned self-control. Another misconception, and I'm going to quote this one, it's condensed, but from the book there from Leonard Sachs. If I love my child, then it means that I also trust my child, right? If she says she didn't cheat on the test, and if I love her, then I have to trust her, right? You can't love without trust. He gives the story of a teacher that caught a girl in her class copying answers off of her cell phone while she was taking the test. And the teacher confiscated the cell phone, took it to the principal's office, and the principal supported the teacher and marked her test a zero. Well, the parents went ballistic, swept in like prosecuting attorneys. It's just the teacher's word against the word of our daughter, the father said. Our daughter said she didn't do it, and our daughter would never lie to us. He says the rules of love between parent and child are different from the rules between adults. He says maybe it's true that true love between adults requires blind trust, but it's certainly not true of a parent's love for a child. He said in this case, the father said, our daughter would never lie to us. I don't know that family, but I do know that father is wrong. Any parent that says such a thing is wrong. Your daughter or son is more likely to lie to you than anyone else because they don't want to disappoint their parents. They don't want to let you down. He goes on to say that in his over 20 years in clinical experience, I've found that whenever a parent says, my child wouldn't lie to me, you can be fairly sure that child is doing just that, lying to the parent. You know, as parents, we need to pray for discernment. We need his help more than ever in the age that we're living in. You know, what really matters, he goes on and gives another example of a parent of a teacher that caught a child cheating and punished her for that, or maybe it was gave a bad grade or something, and that so happened her parents were very affluent people, knew the school board well, and she got a message from the school board a couple days later, said you apologize publicly in front of the classroom and say that you were wrong or you lost your job. And she wasn't ready to lose her job, so she did. She got up in front of the classroom and said that she's sorry, that she shouldn't have done that. And the next year when school started, she got up and she said, if you want to cheat on your test, that's up to you. I'm not going to do anything about it. But she said, I hope you don't. But I just want to tell you now, I'm not going to do anything about it. Sad. You know what? What really matters? What are some important things that we should be doing as families? You know, someone sent me a little video clip, just noticed it this morning. I'm not sure if it was sent this morning or last night, and there was a whole family, father, children from this big to this big, grabbing a 6x6 or a 5x5 pole, I'm not sure what it was, and they were dragging it off the trailer, and they were taking it over and pushing it up together and putting it in the hole. Well, there's a positive thing of doing something together as a family. You know, I think one important thing, that something that's we find a struggle with, at least we do, you have to work for, is meals together, and meals together without media interruptions. You know, mealtime should be in no phone place, and definitely in no media play time. It should be a positive time. If there are issues to be dealt with, it shouldn't be at mealtime. Unless, of course, it is eating what's on the table. Maybe that has to be dealt with there. You know, we become so busy, and we think our time is so valuable. And actually, it's interesting that Leonard made the observation that he's been in all different countries researching, and he said, America is the only country in the world where people are proud of how busy they are. Take pride in just trying to jam in, see how much stuff they can jam into their schedule. But you know, we've become so busy that sometimes we think our time is so valuable that it's actually cheaper to buy our food rather than garden. And it's probably true in some cases. But you know, there's a lot more to gardening than just the produce we raise. You know, it's that working together in the garden. It's a great family project, great time to spend time together. There's also the aspect of better food value. You know, family devotions, singing together, listening to good stories together while you're traveling or in the car. Vacation time. You know, I believe looking forward to and working for a vacation it's important that it's not just taken for granted, but it's something that's worked for and looked forward to. You know, I believe it's important that all are involved in vacation or family outings. It shouldn't be optional for family members to opt out of going. It's good for children to have to have friends and to be able to spend time with friends. But family time should take priority. You know, parents should be the authority figure in their lives, not peers. Children need to learn responsibility. Chores, household chores, farm chores. You know, children need to learn to be responsible to do chores right. Proverbs 12:10 says, "A righteous man regardeth the life of his beasts, but the tender mercies of the wicked are cruel." A righteous man regardeth the life of his beasts. You know, having animals, taking care of them right, making sure their needs are met, is important. Encouraging good to hobbies. Be involved in your children's outings and so on. You know, just because everyone else's children are doing it doesn't mean it's the best thing for your child. Like we heard this morning in our Sunday school, I think it applies here. Don't compare yourself among yourselves. Just because everyone else has one doesn't mean that it's the thing for them to have even, and the thing maybe not the thing for your child. Now, the Christian's goals for their family should be vastly different than what American culture promotes. You know, the old Pepsi slogan, live for now. Yeah, if it feels good, do it. There are no rules. You know, instead of that, you are teaching. I trust we are teaching conscientiousness, honesty, self-control, and integrity. You know, we're battling the culture that is promoting to live out of reality. A.W. Tozer says, life is not a playground, it's a battlefield. In closing, I'd like to read out of Colossians chapter 3, several verses there, and you're welcome to turn to it, or you can just listen. I think he puts it so, I've read a couple of the verses already, but he puts the picture of what the family should be, what God wants for his families, if you want to put it that way. Colossians 3, verse 10. And have put on the new man, which is renewed in knowledge after the image of him that created him. For there is neither Greek nor Jew, circumcision nor uncircumcision, barbarian, Scythian, bond nor free, but Christ is all and in all. Put on therefore as the elect of God, holy and beloved, bowels of mercies, kindness, humbleness of mind, meekness, long-suffering, forbearing one another, and forgiving one another. If any man have a quarrel against any, even as Christ forgave you, so also do ye. And above all these things put on charity, which is a bond of perfectness. And let the peace of God rule in your hearts, to the which ye also ye are called in one body, and be ye thankful. Let the word of Christ dwell in you richly, in all wisdom, teaching and admonishing one another in psalms and hymns and spiritual songs, singing with grace in your hearts to the Lord. And whatsoever ye do in word or deed, do all in the name of the Lord Jesus, giving thanks to God and the Father by him. Wives, submit yourselves unto your own husbands, as it is fit in the Lord. Husbands, love your wives, and be not bitter against them. Children, obey your parents in all things, for this is well-pleasing unto the Lord. Fathers, provoke not your children to anger, lest they be discouraged. Servants, obey in all things your masters according to the flesh, not with eye service as men pleasers, but in singleness of heart, fearing God. And whatsoever ye do, do it heartily as to the Lord and not unto men, knowing that of the Lord ye shall receive the reward of the inheritance, for ye serve the Lord Christ. But he that doeth wrong shall receive for the wrong which he hath done, and there is no respect of persons. Let's kneel for prayer.